found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's
a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me...
Faith Hertzberg.
And...
Guy Davis.
Welcome to your weekly shot of Star Trek. We've got news.
Oh, wait. In the vein. I was just helping. Sorry.
It's not time for news yet?
I wasn't doing a very good job of helping. I interrupted you. Sorry.
Yay, awkward moments.
Yay! Those make for best. But anyway, news. We just spoke with Vic Mignogna a couple days ago. We actually spoke with him on Wednesday night, and we released it, I guess, Friday? And Thursday, news broke that CBS has politely asked Horizon to not pursue further funding for a sequel.
That's an interesting twist to this.
This is really sad because, I mean, in our interview with Vic, he said, you know, we kind of questioned about, you know, what's going on with CBS and whatnot. He said he would not, there's no way continues would, you know, come under a lawsuit. If anything happened, it would be CBS asking to stop. And literally the next day after talking with Vic about it, someone has been asked to stop. And
it was... It was very surprising to find us speculating over that and then having the news posted the following day.
This is frightening to me.
That's an interesting twist to it.
This is the 50th...
Terrifying.
Yes, terrifying. This is frightening, terrifying. This is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, and we don't have a trailer for the new movie yet. We've got a lawsuit going on against a major fan film, and we've got not a DNR, but a pre-DNR, please don't pursue funding on another fan film. Oh, this is not what I envisioned for the 50th anniversary of Star Trek.
Yeah, the weather is not looking very good for the way that this is going, but, you know, you never really know what's going to happen just around. It could suddenly get better. This could be all of it. We don't know.
It could be, and I think that... I don't remember who it was. I think it was James Colley, that once said a long time ago. I mean, it was a long, long time ago. I think he once said something like, you know, this is CBS's sandbox. And if they want to tell us to not play in it, that's their right. We say, thank you so much for letting us play. And then we pick up our stuff and leave. And I thought, that's a very true thing. And in that point of view, I kind of agree with Kali on that. But I do see repercussions. I mean, it's for me and Tamerlan, like I've been starting up my own property, my own IP, and fast tracking it. I had been planning on doing this for a while, but with this environment, I'm thinking it's probably better to move to my own IP and get off of Star Trek completely. But you've got kind of a counterpoint thought process here, which is it's the fans that obsess over Star Trek that hold this universe together. Otherwise, it would be like Lost in Space, where there are some people who still like Robbie the Robot, and we all know danger, 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 Will Robinson.
Danger.
But the truth of the matter is you don't have conventions about Lost in Space. And part of what keeps this universe alive is the fan base and us who keep espousing our love of the show by putting out the fan fiction. The problem, of course, with that is that I don't think CBS has a problem with the fan fiction. I think CBS has a problem with making money off of the fan fiction, which is also fine, and that's cool. But, I mean, I only know a small amount of some of these things, but I know that some of these fan films, they're $20,000 or $40,000 to make the fan films. That's not something I keep in my back pocket. And, I mean, you know, if I had the money that it took to build the sets for Phase 2 – I'd own this house that I live in. I wouldn't be paying a mortgage because that's an insane amount of money that they've put forward in those sets. And that's great dedication. That's great love, but it also limits the number of people who can present their fandom.
Well, it takes a lot of love and effort for those guys to do it.
Yeah,
so you got a small percentage of the people that have continued on the flame, so to speak, and kept the interest going. And like you pointed out, I mean, and Vic pointed out as well, a lot of these guys started off paying out of their own pocket.
I mean, Vic did, and Michelle, I think he said he spent over $100,000 of his own money to make the first episode of Pilgrim of Eternity. I mean, like, if there's anything that's dedication, that is dedication to make a fan film that he's got no return on other than people just pouring out love for it.
And you think about that. Vic used Starship Farragut sets. So that's $100,000 on top of what John Broughton put forth to make those sets. I mean, that is an insane amount of money to put in for what Farragut put out, then what continues put out. That's a lot of money. And that's, I mean, you know, that's amazing. And it's very respectable. But it is it is tough when it gets to the point where all of these guys are trying to produce more than one episode. They're trying to produce more than one thing. Mm-hmm. And you start thinking about some of the logistics of this. Farragut has an old furniture store in Georgia that they built their sets in. Mm-hmm. Well, the sets are standing. They're not going anywhere because they would destroy the sets, taking them down.
Yeah.
So they leave them standing in this old furniture store. Well, the furniture store, it's an old furniture warehouse. It's got a rent. Who's paying the rent? You know, so you can't afford to just, it's not financially viable to make one episode and then tear everything down, throw everything away, and be done. You need to try to make two or three or four episodes. Well, at $100,000 a pop, that's, you know, not something we can all just rattle out. So there's a need for this crowdfunding, and it's a viable need. But then we get into that very gray area. What does it belong? Who belongs? Who owns it? You know, once it's there, who owns it? Is it CBS? Is that fair to build off of their IP? And of course, for a long time prior to 2009, it seemed like CBS was going to let their IP die anyway. Until we started the new movies. And then once J.J. Abrams made it, it was such a radically different world that it looked like the old IPs would be safe. And, you know, now we're talking about the new CBS show and who knows where it's going to be. But, of course, the rumor mill is rolling that it's going to be post-Star Trek VI,
which puts it behind the
universe, and before TNG. Now that's re-going into the zone where we get a lot of movement for the fan films. So they really are crossing over.
Yeah.
And so, before it was like, well, we weren't treading on their IP because J.J. Abrams had made such a radical different IP. So it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, this is really tough. And I think the safest thing for a lot of us is to say, it was fun playing in your sandbox. Thank you so much for letting us play in your sandbox. We'll move on.
Well, my hope for what's happening currently is that CBS has to kind of press the pause button on everything so it can fulfill its lawsuit that they're trying to do and not show any favoritism to any other fan films, which may be, I mean, nothing has happened to any other film, but I'm just saying because it's already happened to Horizon, it could possibly happen to any others based on the broad terminology in the lawsuit, you know, like using characters, names, you know, ship names, like any of that stuff is a fair game as far as, like, you know, what they're pursuing in the lawsuit. So my hopes and dreams for the future of fan fiction, Star Trek fan films is that hopefully the lawsuit will run its course. Maybe they can, and then hopefully things can pick back up under a new set of more strict guidelines or something lays down in stone. Like, you know, that way, hopefully we can continue to use the playground once once the renovation is complete.
So they're going to establish things. Well, then you want to wonder whether, like, I'm running a Patreon. Am I violating? You're not supporting Tamerlan. You're supporting me, the artist. But is that violating it? You know, that starts to get into that. Because let's just say they say no crowdfunding. Okay, no crowdfunding. Gotcha. That's not a problem. Is Patreon considered part of that crowdfunding?
Yeah, are you actually crowdfunding for what you're doing? And then it leads to questions about, you know, well, if you're selling your episodes or whatever, well, what's going on here? And everybody suddenly comes under the microscope.
I don't know.
And if I don't sell my episodes, I'm sorry, David, I don't mean to cut you off.
Oh, go ahead.
But if I don't sell the episodes, let's say I don't sell a single comic book with any of my Tamerlan stuff. It's all free. But then what's to stop, you know, Me Studios from opening up a Patreon on Me Studios, which has nothing to do with my Star Trek super awesome thing, and then have all you guys become patrons of the studio and not patrons of the show, and then I'm still giving away free episodes. So I think what will end up happening, and that's what worries me the most about this whole thing, is I think they will start saying if there's crowdfunding attached to the project in any way, and this will include a Patreon, then you're in violation. And so that's what's worrying me at this point in time. I actually am kind of concerned also, and I don't mean to keep changing the subject, but there's a small amount of concern I've got that they're going to lose.
CBS?
CBS. Because there is a weird chain of custody between Desilu Studios and CBS and NBC and who owns the rights in the 60s. Because remember, when the original series went off the air, it was junk. They didn't care for it. And it wasn't until the 70s when things started to resurge and start to come back up. So there was a lot of screwed up chain of custody. And so there is a good chance that the Axanar team, the Axanar lawyers, are going to win the lawsuit and put Star Trek, the original series, in public domain. The only thing that Paramount can hold would be Star Trek the Motion Picture on, because they have chain of custody on those.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it furthers the divided, because now CBS and Paramount have joint custody of the different parts of Star Trek.
Right, and that's always been sort of a problem, and that concerns me a lot, because what I'm worried about from that point of view is a repercussion against anybody who's using anything except for TOS era. It's not going to be a threat to Tamerlan since we're in TOS era, but I could never move to the movie era. I could never move out of original series era, and that's it, because that would be the only part that would be public domain, and they would have a right to be very upset about anybody who moves into movie era, next gen era, or into Enterprise era. Yep. And you couldn't refer to Enterprise era and TOS. It would be very much like anybody remember the Starfleet Battles? Amarillo Design Bureau's Starfleet Battles?
Yeah.
The board game, the tactical board game?
Yeah.
They have their own universe because they bought the rights to TOS in 1978 when nobody thought it was worth anything and nobody cared. And they still have the rights to that, just that. And they have just TOS and the Starfleet Technical Manual from Franz Joseph. And that's it. So the history before and after the original series is completely different in Starfleet Battles universe. They've got a completely different world. And that's what I think would end up being acceptable in this instance. And that worries me a little bit because I kind of feel that would cause a real fracture in the way that we do stuff. And it would cause a fracture in the way that they would refer to stuff. We wouldn't get episodes like today's episode Flashback. Hey, did you notice I just tied that in? We wouldn't be able to get that because we're now referring to, or Trials and Tribulations, which does literally refer to the original series.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, it's one of those things. It's kind of like, you know, you can quote Shakespeare because it's public domain. But if you make a movie about Shakespeare, that's intellectual property. So, you know, you've got kind of I can keep quoting the original Shakespeare, but I can't quote from the movie that you did, you know.
So, even though it's probably similar lines.
Right. And that would get really confusing and weird. And so there's a certain amount of concern that I have that this will work, because that'll cause a real problem with the chain of custody, with the way that the way CBS and Paramount deals with the show. And that could really change the way that they handle their properties going forward.
Yeah,
it would just make it a lot more aggressive for everybody, and we really don't need to escalate things at all.
You know, I hope
so. It is a concern. Yeah, I've got a lot of interesting concerns about this.
I know. I hope things don't get worse. But like I said, I just wanted to bring this to your guys' attention if you hadn't seen it already. But I'm sure you probably already have because it's already all over Facebook. But it's just something I wanted to talk about, especially since it's right off the heels of our Vic interview. But like Guy Davis mentioned, we are talking about an episode today, not just news.
We are.
We're talking about Voyager Season 3, Episode 2, Flashback. This episode is part of Star Trek's 30th anniversary.
Which had two of them. Do you want me to give the recap?
Yes, please. Take it away.
Okay. Stardate 50126.4. After a brief scene with Neelix and Tuvok, in which we learn the history of Tuvok's breakfast,
yum,
we discover that the Voyager has found a nebula loaded with a very useful element, ceruleum.
That blows up food.
Yes, it was. As the story moves to the bridge and Janeway and crew discuss what they could do with the ceruleum, Tuvok begins shaking and ends up having to go to sickbay.
Not enough cocaine.
Coffee.
While on his way there, he suddenly has a flashback of him as a child, trying to save a young girl from falling off a cliff. Can Tuvok save her? No. She falls, much to his horror. Tuvok arrives...
If he would have used two hands, he might have been able to. He was kind of just like, just not using the other hand.
Yeah, he really was just kind of like, I'm going to hurt you.
It's like, I'm so strong, I'm Vulcan. I can just do it by myself, right?
Right, because he's a Vulcan. When Tuvok arrives in sickbay, he collapses in Kes's arms.
Ooh, that's where he's always wanted to be.
You knew it.
Especially when she kissed him in Warlord.
It happens. Tuvok explains the memory, but says he remembers no such occurrence happening. The doctor puts a cortical monitor on the security officer and dismisses him. Because collapsing is all ship. Anyway... That night, Tuvok builds a structure of harmony, which clearly is a device Vulcan preschoolers use to achieve Kolinar and improve fine motor skills.
And ABCs.
His fine motor skills are disrupted by the events of that earlier that day. I really saw no other use for that scene specifically. Okay.
I just think, that scene, like, Vulcans have, like, really simple toys. Like, they're like ABC blocks, but they're just different shapes, and you stack them up, and it looks different every time, just like kids' ABC blocks.
Right. Fine motor skills, man.
And then, in Enterprise, I think they say, like, Vulcan children have more complex toys. I'm like, really? Those blocks?
They play with blocks in Voyager, man.
Oh, that's an adult toy, I guess. Maybe the adult toys go a little bit more retro.
Phrasing. Anyway,
This is why we do Synthaholics, adult toys.
Right.
Carry on.
And they're all blocks, which is not good. Anyway.
They chafe a little bit.
Okay, I'm back. I'm fine. Okay.
And scene.
The doctor suggests it's a repressed memory when someone blocks out a traumatic event, which is strange since clearly Tuvok has no problem remembering said traumatic event. Anyway, he recommends a mind meld with a family member. Tuvok feels the person closest to him family-wise is none other than Captain Janeway.
He's a mama's boy.
Yeah.
Because Chakotay would kind of be like his dad since he was serving under him in the Maquis. Yeah.
Oh, that's
Tuvok Janeway reminds him of his dad. That's an interesting thing.
That's creepy.
That just happened. Wow.
That's like an Oedipus complex gone wrong. You remind me of my father. However, you do not have the ears. Okay. Okay.
Giggity.
However, instead of going to the precipice with the girl memory, Tuvok and Janeway flash back to the Excelsior under none other than Captain Sulu. Ah, there's the repression. Got it. We are in the events that occurred around Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. We spend some time here, as the events in the Azure Nebula are run over quite a few times. Tuvok makes tea for Sulu, eliciting scorn from Janeway as she observes, he never made tea for her.
And Grace Lee Whitley is thinking he's trying to bribe Sulu into promotion.
Yeah.
Because
this won't get you a promotion.
Because sleeping with Kirk didn't give her a promotion at all.
So you're thinking he's trying to sleep with Sulu? Wait a minute.
Is that crossing the streams?
We crossed the streams.
No, it'd probably be effective.
I think we passed the line a while back there.
You're on Synthaholics. The line was crossed at the door.
There you go.
Once the teleporter was engaged. I'm sorry, man.
We're sorry, Franklin. Does that make us cannibals if we sustained ourselves off of the rest of Franklin's pattern?
Ooh, that would be really gross. Yeah, where did that go? Because there was a pattern.
I don't know
that there was like matter somewhere in a stream. Where did it go?
Or maybe it's like
somewhere Franklin's like sitting on the surface of that Dyson sphere,
or going,
this sucks.
Or maybe it's like the fly. Maybe Scotty is part Franklin. Maybe he'll start to like sprout a Franklin eyebrow or something.
This eyebrow is from Franklin.
Brought to you by Franklin. Found
in memory of him. Okay. Tuvok talks to his bunkmate, Dimitri Valtaine, and tells him much about how he actually doesn't like humans and their constant stupid dad jokes, and how his parents made him join Starfleet. Valtaine pretty much says, whoa, angst much, dude? And then rolls over and goes back to sleep. Back on the bridge, Sulu faces off with Kang, who looks a lot more menacing now than when they did last saw each other 30 years ago. In a rather classic exchange, Sulu outsmarts Kang, and then they head back to help Captain Kirk. But the Klingons thwart them, and Dimitri is killed when a console sacrifices itself and Dimitri in order to save the life of some unsung fuse somewhere in the ship.
Poor Tuvok. He just keeps on saying, just, you gotta move, instead of standing up and moving him away from the console.
I know, I thought that too. I'm like, don't stand there, push him.
You know he's gonna, you know, change the past, move him. You know it's gonna blow up. You've warned him 3 times now. Maybe you could do something a little bit more proactive, Tuvok, instead of talking to the guy. You're distracting him. If you didn't distract him, he could have gotten away.
Right. Because Dimitri would have finished typing in his phone number into the phone console.
Because he was trying to pick up that really hot Klingon chick on Kang's ship that was sending him, you know, nude selfies, you know?
You know, Dimitri secretly was into those, man. This is the behind the scenes stuff that you learn on Synthaholics.
Yeah, like she's got secretly ridges all the way down, and he dug that.
Board, thanks.
Yeah, he's getting nude selfies. This is why he's his back is faced to Sulu.
Rule 34.
He takes his own selfies.
Yeah, he can lift up that really thick wool, you know, uniform.
Yeah, man.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's gonna scar my mind for a while.
You're welcome.
Thanks, guys. I'm gonna go report to the med bay.
You can have sweet, sexy dreams tonight.
Okay. The death of Dimitri triggers the flashback. And things get worse when Janeway becomes part of the memory, and Sulu has her and Tuvok escorted off the bridge. Luckily, they have control over this dream, and they restart the memory back at the beginning. And now they need to do the old knock the police officer out and leave him naked trick. Unfortunately, the police officer is Janice Rand, which is horrifying. Anyway.
Not in the 60s it wasn't.
Not in the 60s it wasn't. But, yeah, back in the present, the doctor is starting to see a pattern in the memory in Graham and thinks it might actually be a virus of some sort. He attacks the virus. It leaves Tuvok and heads over to Janeway, where she sees the girl on the cliff. Can she save her? No.
We don't know.
The doctor goes after the virus in Janeway, and then the virus dies. But at first, it decides to be a real jerk and make Janeway and Tuvok experience the scene over and over and over again, except this time as different kids and different ethnic groups in concurrently more extreme and uncomfortable costumes. Finally,
that poor Eskimo kid, good grief.
I know, yeah. I was like, is going on? The costumes are getting weirder and weirder. Finally, Tuvok and Janeway come out of the mind meld and are saved. Janeway asks Tuvok if he's nostalgic, and he says, "I am a Vulcan." Everyone laughs, except Tuvok, and the episode ends.
And Janeway still reminds him of his dad.
Yep, and Janeway still reminds him of his dad, except without the ears.
And
Flashback was production number 145 in Star Trek Voyager. It's number 2 in the third season, the 44th episode produced, and the 43rd aired. It aired on September 11th, 1996.
Wow, September 11th.
Did you even breathe? That was awesome.
Yes.
There you go.
Thank you for doing the recap.
Fast forward. Good job.
That was so awesome.
Why, thank you. Thank you very much.
That was really well done.
I totally dropped the ball when I did it on Reunion. So thank you. That was amazing.
It was fun watching them.
Enjoyed that. That was fun.
I hope you don't mind the interruption, because that's my shtick.
Oh, no. It's good. We're fine.
Well,
he's like the stick in a bike tire.
Well, this episode went along with, you know, the 30th anniversary, along with Trials and Tribulations, which we've already talked about a little bit in a previous episode.
Yeah, actually, I sort of feel my general feeling of Flashback is, as an episode, it's not a bad episode. As a companion piece to Trials and Tribulations, though, it's weaker, only because they managed to do a technical superior job with Trials and Tribulations by actually intersecting that into an actual TOS episode, which was such a technical coup at the time in 96, that to me, having watched this first run, I feel like this isn't as powerful an episode. I was telling David before we were recording, and I'll tell Faith the story now. My mother was a producer and a talent agent. And so I grew up with actors and grew up with the movie magic. You know, she was constantly saying, "Oh, boom mic in the scene." And, you know, she was constantly finding, you know, it was kind of sad because in a way she took a lot of the magic away. But
oh, no.
One of the things that my mom and I had a real connection was, in 96, I had been living on my own for about 3 years. And when Star Trek would come on, she would call me in the middle of the episode and say, "That was a fun scene, but I think that Jonathan Frakes really was phoning it in during the sequence." I mean, it was like as if I was still sitting next to her watching the episode, and she was still deconstructing the episode. Well, because of my 20s arrogance thingy, and I being all mad at Deep Space Nine for trying to be better than awesomer than Babylon 5.
No, your words were they were cock blocking.
They were, yes, Babylon but 5. I'm not going to say that on air. You can say it though.
Okay.
Anyway, because see, on air, yeah. I'm a much more refined person.
Politically correct.
Than I am. When I'm off air, I'm not as refined, which means I get, you know.
So I guess that just means I get to quote you on air.
Yeah, you can quote. That's totally acceptable. Because I can deny it. I didn't say that. You know, because that's the way it always works. Anyway, she had called me in the middle of Trials and Tribulations, and I hadn't been watching Deep Space Nine because I had been all mad at it. So I had been watching Voyager, and she was calling me during Deep Space Nine and said, "Okay, how did they do this? How did they do the whole episode? I don't even know how they did this." I was still early in my animation career, so we were still following all of the latest technology on green screen, blue screen technology and animation and all that stuff. And so that was a memory I have, and it was actually because of that episode that I started watching Deep Space Nine. Because I hadn't watched Deep Space Nine up until Trials and Tribulations. Then I had to go back and find, you know, and backtrack through all of DS9.
Well, you know,
and then it turned out – I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just saying, you know, your young teenage arrogance or 20-ish arrogance might have saved you a good bit, because I love Deep Space Nine. It is literally my favorite series, but those first three seasons are a wee bit painful.
Rough.
So, like, yeah. You know, you get Trials and Tribulations. You're right in the middle of the good stuff. You know, if you started there, went forward, like, there's very little I can find fault with in Deep Space Nine around that point.
It really was. It's the hair rule of Star Trek. Star Trek has a hair rule, and that is when the hair changes on a character, it gets good. For TNG, it was when Riker got the beard. For Voyager, it's when Janeway let her hair down.
And when Picard grew his hair.
For Deep Space Nine, it's when he shaved his head and got the goatee.
Oh, yeah.
And And so, I mean, really, that's part of the reason why Enterprise didn't do so well was because
Scott there wasn't that didn't get a mohawk.
Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, we didn't. Chair. We should have gotten a mohawk. That
you know,
awesome.
You know, T'Pol should have had a longer hair because I mean, I'm not a super fan of the short hair, but if she would have grown her hair out, I think she would have been like pretty
she
rockin'.
Looked really good in the Mirror Universe episodes.
Yeah, when she had the long hair.
She
looked amazing. It
just doesn't fit the classic bowl cut feel of the Vulcans, and I understand that, and I appreciate that.
Savick
had long hair, and it was okay.
And she was I liked Savick's long hair.
Yeah, I liked Robin Curtis, and I liked Kirstie Alley as Savick. I think I liked Curtis better, but I had a crush on her, so that sort of changes your perspective.
Yeah, I think I liked Kirstie Alley better because she was the original. But then it was kind of neat to see a Vulcan with a perm.
That's true.
That's a good point.
So,
you know, went from like long straight hair to a Vulcan with a perm.
Right. So to a degree, I think that my feelings are that this was a very good episode, and it was great to see George Takei and Grace Lee Whitney in an episode again. And you know, and David and I both went and reread through Wikipedia's
memory
thing
alpha.
On that and learned a whole bunch of stuff
it's like one of the longest entries I've ever read. This is like insanity. But like some of the cliff notes just so you guys don't have to read it. Nichelle Nichols was contacted to play Uhura.
Wow.
And she turned it down because she felt like it didn't involve a fan dance.
Okay, so
or because she said it didn't like do her character justice.
Yeah, it didn't character justice.
Her character
George
didn't
Takei
say a lot anyway,
and
though.
Begged her, George Takei called and begged her to do this, and she wouldn't.
I just don't understand like why. I mean, because I mean, she never had very big parts in episodes anyway. I mean, I mean, sure, this would probably be the smallest ever, but I mean, I don't know. I really wish she would have given in to George Takei, but maybe she was busy, had some other things going on.
She turned it down. And of course, Takei is on record talking about it, but he's such a gracious actor. He won't say anything bad about her because he's such a gracious actor. He really is. Takei is. But also, I think that's interesting that Tim Russ, the original, the scene where he's talking to Janeway in the bunk room after he just, said, "I hate humans because they're stupid." And Janeway's like, "Do you really feel that way?" And he said, "Well, I did at the time. And then I left." And, because she said, "I thought you were on the Wyoming and that was when your career started. I didn't know you were on the Excelsior." And he said, "Well, this was my first pass at it. And then I quit for many years." Mm. And I originally, apparently, that was written very short. It was like, "I quit for many years and became a pod farmer or something stupid." And Tim Russ didn't like it. And so he had them redo it into a much richer and a much more interesting backstory on Tuvok, which I thought was really good. So lots of props to Tim Russ on that.
For sure.
That rebuild.
And I think also because they lost Uhura showing up in the show, he kind of had the leeway to do that because they were missing 5 minutes of the episode because
right.
She didn't want to come do that scene, so they had to kind of like work around it. So they also had Neelix burn his food. So
right,
that they
right. Neelix had to burn his food. That was important.
Because Neelix can't do anything competent.
No, and especially like cooking eggs, which, I feel for Neelix. I have a hard time cooking eggs too. So, there you go. I just don't set the fire.
They really don't like you.
They want to stay in the shell. Don't let us out.
Yeah. What? I was supposed to crack them out of the shell first?
No. No. That's crunchy. Crunchy eggs. But so interesting things. I mean, like you were saying, you felt that Trials and Tribulations had more of a wow factor. Because it was a very visible wow factor. The wow factor in this episode is reading the Memory Alpha. Because they had to recreate an exact copy of the Excelsior set. Because that got destroyed 5 years before when, they were done with Star Trek VI.
Yeah, apparently there were only like two pieces of the set that they could recover.
Yeah, they had to build pretty much the whole thing from scratch. And then only use it on one episode. Like, that's like insanity. And not only did they do that, you know, not only did they get George Takei and Janice Rand to reprise their roles, most of the people on the bridge crew they reached out with, and they tried to get as many of the actors back from the movie as they could. Like, it's stuff like that. You probably don't notice the extras very much in movies, but they got as many of them back as they could. And to me, it's a different kind of wow factor once you read all the work that went into this behind the scenes versus what you saw on the screen. I mean, you did see it on the screen, but you don't think about that so much when you're watching things, I think.
Sure. I mean, and that was, and the other thing that I thought was amazing was that they managed to put that set together in 5 days, which took the original set builders for Star Trek VI 2 months. And they threw that set together in 5 days on a TV schedule. And they knew we'd be watching for indiscrepancies. And Mike Okuda was talking about trying to match the screens so that the screens in the background were running the same loops. But because movie loops are run in 12-second sequences and TV loops are only run in 5-second sequences, they were really overworking their tech people back there because they were – I mean, it wasn't supposed to be this short or a short of time. Movies have a lot more freedom and a lot more time to do things, and they've got the ability to do things in a day. So, putting it all this movie set on a TV timeline was amazing.
And they tried to match as many of the internal shots when the ship got shocked as they could. Like they did tremendous work on trying to make this line up with Star Trek VI. And I did criticize this a little bit back when we were on Faith's Fave 5, because this is one of her Fave 5. I did criticize this a bit that I felt like George Takei's performance wasn't as strong in this episode as it was in the movie. And another interesting thing that came out of the Memory Alpha, they didn't use any of the on the ship, inside the ship footage, because the actors had all changed too much in the 5 years in between when the movie was shot and when they were doing the show. So it would have been too jarring to try to put that original scene with, you know, George Takei saying, "My God, shields, shields," and then and then it would have been jarring to see him go from there to, you know, 5 years later in just the very next scene, in the very next cut or whatever, because of, you know, how the scenes changed.
Yeah. I think that it's interesting that the canon has changed in that movie, and now when you watch Star Trek VI, the cup of tea that falls off is Tuvok's tea.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's interesting, because I didn't notice that until I rewatched it in preparation for this podcast. I was rewatching it going, check that out. The teacup that falls on the ground in the movie is Tuvok's tea that he had made special for Sulu, that Janeway was grumping about the fact that Tuvok never made him tea or made her tea.
Oh, it could be him because she reminds him of his dad, you know.
Well, it reminds him of his dad, you know, except without the ears. Exactly.
So does dad have boobs?
Maybe. Well, you know.
Man boobs? Vulcan man boobs?
Yeah, it could happen. Yeah.
Boobs. Sure. Flues? Yeah,
so
boobs? No, I'm fine.
My little small brief brush with Star Trek VI, one of my mom's talent was and a good friend of the family was an extra on the bridge of Star Trek VI on the Excelsior, and I've got pictures of him with Gracie Lee Whitney, and now I've got to go see if I can hunt him down, because my mom passed away a long time ago and I've lost contact with a lot of them. See if I can hunt him down and ask him if he was recalled for this, because I didn't realize that they found as many of the original actors from the movie to reprise their roles in flashback. So they got Jeremy Roberts to play Dimitri von Valtaine, and Boris Krutonog, who's the helmsman, but some of them had left the industry. Like Boris had left the industry. He'd retired. So they had to call him up and say, "Would you do one more job, please?"
Please come and do a job.
And summon him back. Which I thought was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on top of getting George and Gracie. Hey!
Yeah. And you know what's interesting? Another piece of trivia. His pants didn't fit. They had to make him new pants.
Yeah, because as he said, somehow the fabric had shrunk. I remember saying that about 10 years ago about my pants. Good heavens, my fabric shrunk on all of these pants. What's going on? Little elves getting into my closet and shrinking the pants every night.
I say that at the beginning of every con season. It's
damn,
like, why
underpants gnomes.
Stupid underpants gnomes. Yep, you've got Faith is like, this happens to be at the beginning of every cosplay season. We sort of talked over you, so I wanted to repeat that because I was like,
thank you.
You're welcome. it's your DSL line that makes you like just one step behind us, and so I'm like, I don't want you to get drowned out, Faith, because of technology.
I'm one step
come back
you,
into the
I'm
light.
Come back. And join
you're
us.
Saying that I'm almost aboard.
Oh,
don't fade out of that transporter beam like Frank.
Then we'd have to have you as an eyebrow. That would suck.
We'd have a unibrow.
Oh,
a unibrow. This is my.
This
you can
is, never pluck me.
This is our memory of Faith.
This is Faith. She's gone now, except for this little patch of hair between my eyes.
Most of her is on the surface her. Of a Dyson sphere.
Faith Esberg, puts of a name.
This is where we cut to the scene of Faith on the surface of the Dyson sphere going, David! Guy! Come on!
Yes! 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 Exactly that.
Oh, man.
Oh, I love this.
If only we had the special effects to do this. Guy, can you bring it up?
Okay, get along.
Let's put Faith on a Dyson sphere. Let's do it.
I'm going to have stick figures, though.
I've got popsicle sticks and some extra fabric. Let's go.
It'd be like that robot chicken. Was it the robot chicken that did the Wrath of Khan as an Italian opera?
I don't know.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. Yes,
I know in Family Guy they did like a Wrath of Khan like Fiddler on the Roof, I think.
Yeah, like an Italian opera.
We're like
where all like stick, or they were all oh come on, action figures.
Oh yeah, well yeah, Robot Chicken's all action figures.
Because
yeah.
It's Robot Chicken. Yeah. 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 That's what Faith and I are gonna build next is the Robot Chicken
Faith on the
version of Faith on the Dyson sphere. Which is where Aaron is right now, I would think.
Aaron might be in the transporter to buffer. And we forgot to mention, like, I know we've been trying to have Guy on for a little while, but Guy was actually in Risa for a while. He was on Risa for a couple weeks.
Lucky Guy.
I was so, totally on Risa drawing, because that's what we do on Risa.
With or without the Horgon?
Is that what
that was the problem. I was going to bring the Horgon, and TSA confiscated it in my luggage.
They thought it was a gun, didn't they?
They thought it was a gun. They thought it was a hort gun. And so that was the end of that one. And so it was confiscated. So there I was on Risa without my hort gun. And you know, that you just so instead I just pulled out, you know, the pad and paper and pencil and that's usually the way I handle pretty much every situation.
Did you draw a hort gun and put it next to you?
If I had drawn the hort gun,
you could have put it next to you.
I did the little glyphs wrong on the Horgon, and instead of all of the things that normally Horgons do, it said, I want a pizza from Pizza Hut. And so I just kept getting pizza all night. It was really weird.
Really? Pizza Hut pizza in Hawaii? They didn't have any of their own local places?
Well, it, you know, it was Rising Pizza. It was Risa Crust.
Risa Pizza. Oh, Rising. Yeah. As opposed to the flat crust.
Right. I mean, they don't have hand tossed or anything. Just Risa Crust.
Risa Crust. Uh-huh. That makes. So, did you see Worf? Did he come and like create torrential downpour on your planet while you were away?
No. I mean, you know, it was your classic Risa world where you know we just had the beautiful double rainbows all the time. I think that was because Worf was the next building over, so it was torrential downpouring right there.
Oh, okay. On the other island.
On the other island, yeah, I was fine. Yeah, it was okay.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of sad. I waved at him once, and he just growled at me. I don't know. Maybe it was because I had the Horgon out. I don't know the Horgon picture. I think he just growled.
Maybe he just doesn't like pizza. He doesn't. They don't have gah on the pizza there.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, you'd think with Risa they would have gah pizza, but I don't know.
I guess you got.
They didn't have anchovies. They didn't have gawk. What's the problem here? I mean,
there's a lot of problems right there.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, you know, they're just not catering to their clientele.
Maybe Klingons don't visit that often. Well, if
they're aiming to let you down, they succeeded, I guess.
So succeeded. I'm sorry. What?
I said if they're aiming to let you down, they certainly succeeded, I guess.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I guess so. Because you know, you'd think that in Ryza it would. But no, they a little bit of a letdown on that instance. Yeah,
no,
it's all right. It's all good.
But you got a lot of drawing done.
I got a lot of drawing done. Boy, I got a lot of drawing done.
That counts.
Which was good. That was a good thing. So yeah, it was great. It was a great, yay. Great. But I'm glad to be back. It's fun to be on these wonderful like almost like fantasy universe worlds like the Ryzen Islands. However, it is nice to be back in the state of mountains because I'm a mountain boy and it's really weird to spend that much time that close to the ocean. It's daunting.
So like this is something interesting I actually was thinking about the other night when I wanted to talk with you about stuff. You know, some people who live on the East Coast are like, oh man, it's so weird moving to the West Coast and seeing the sun set over the water instead of rise over the water. So like, what's it like being in a place where it does both at the same time? Is that nice?
You mean, so for me, my biggest problem is I grew up all of my life in Denver, and the mountains are to the west. And we live here like this so much that we've got, you know, you can go north, south, east, or mountains. You know, and so when we're anywhere, like I have a real hard time in California because the mountains are on the east. And my brain, I will turn myself around and end up in San Francisco while trying to head to San Diego because I'm just so sure I'm headed north or south because the mountains are to the west. And when you're on Hawaii, or in this case, Ryza, the mountain is ever present and always to one side. And it's really weird. That's just with my entire order of things. And so, you know, I was constantly feeling like I was always going north as I went around the island. I was just always going north. And it was like my brain just could not comprehend the fact that I was not, in fact, always going north.
Every way is north.
Everywhere was north on the island.
Man, talk about getting lost. Man.
It really was. And I'm really good with spatial direction. And so it's really unnerving. And it's because it's an island, it has the same problems that Japan does, which is a lot of people packed in a very small space. So the roads are like spaghetti, and they're everywhere, all over different – because there were buildings here before, and there are now more buildings, and there are high-rises in the weirdest places. And it's just a really surreal place, but I really enjoyed it. I mean, I'm not knocking the place. It was really fun. I'm glad to be back in – you know, a place that I can predict and understand.
Yes. Well, you know the terrain.
Colorado.
You know the terrain. You can hunt the animals.
Yeah, it's exactly. Like, I understand Colorado very well. This is a good place. I'm solid here.
And we're very glad to have you join us back on the show. Yes. And I think in 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about Galaxy Quest.
All right. That's going to be
something.
Good.
Something.
That's going to be good.
Something we've been teasing since the first time.
Galaxy Quest to be accurate.
Yes, that is the only way you pay tribute to Galaxy Quest.
Exactly. It's appropriate.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And we've been like teasing this ever since we had Guy on the first time. So it's been something I've been definitely looking forward to.
Me too. Me too. It's one of my favorite Star Trek movies.
It's very Star Trek-esque, but it's definitely one of my favorites too. And it's always fun to break from the Star Trek mold every now and then to visit something that's, you know, still fun and still science fiction and still something we can synthaholify, if that's a word.
Synthaholify.
It will be eventually.
One day it'll be.
We're pointing it.
Or just petition Merriam-Webster.
Yes. It'll go right next to ain't. It'll have one of our pictures. It'll have one of our cover arts as the, you know, the picture in the dictionary if you need help with what it is.
It's okay. Thankfully, it starts with an S, so we'll still be before twerking.
Yes. Thank goodness.
Just to point out the good news.
The good news. Synthaholify will come before twerking. Thank you. Thank you, twerking, for having a letter that comes after S.
Yeah, that's all we asked of you.
But then it would be ST, like Star Trek, Synthaholify twerking.
And we're always hoping that you're going to be flipping through the dictionary. You'll get to Synthaholics and, oh, I probably should continue on to T, but first, let's listen to this podcast.
Oh, and yeah.
We distract them.
And then they won't ever get the twerk. That's great. For all those people that read the dictionary all night.
Star Trek episodes.
There you go. There's nothing wrong with this plan. This is a good plan.
This is a perfect plan. Nothing could go wrong.
No, no. What could possibly go wrong?
Anyway, that's our take on the latest news in Star Trek and the Voyager episode of...
Flashback.
Flashback, yes. I was blanking on that. I'm sorry.
It's all right. We got it. We're good. We're all safe.
All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or at Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. And you can follow us at Synthaholic Duo. You can follow me on Twitter at David_J_Duncan.
You can find me at Faith Hertzberg on Twitter.
And you can find me at USS Tamerlan. And you can find USS Tamerlan on Facebook.
And isn't the website USS Tamerlan?
Oh, well, you can visit the website USS Tamerlan as well. And soon, witchesofflame.com. Because that'll happen. It will.
Yay!
Excellent. Please take a look at us on iTunes, and we are new to Google Play Music, so you can check us out on there, so you don't have to download any third-party app on your Android device now. We will natively be on your Android now, so be afraid or just download us and enjoy.
We have infected your device.
We've infected your device. And if you would like, please, please give us ratings and stars so we can move up in the rankings so more people can find us. And, you know, if you like what you hear, to visit our Patreon, which is patreon.com/synthaholics. And you can toss us some support to help keep this show going. Anyways, guys, thank you all so much for listening. Until next time, this has been your weekly shot of Star Trek. Live long and prosper. Best drinking friend I ever had.
Why are we not recording all of this?
Because we
didn't want evidence.
Because we were saying we didn't want to have it show up in public spaces. If you can dodge a truck, you can dodge a ball. I just started hitting the recording, so I decided to put that on there.
Just so we'll remember all of that.
Yeah, yeah, for posterity's sake. Because I try to keep all my audio, even if it doesn't make it to an episode. I try to keep it grouped together with the original audio files on a separate hard drive somewhere in case.
When we record Geek Tank, we just start recording. And then every so often, I'll just take random stuff from the stuff that we were just recording before and after the show and throw it in somewhere and just mess with stuff. Because some of it's really good, and then some of it's the coffee shop just rattling along for like 20 minutes. And we're like, really? Really? We recorded that?
Yeah. Oh. Well, I mean, like, lately, like, Faith and I have been trying to figure out our dynamic. Because, I mean, even when Aaron and I started, it took a little bit for us to, like, figure out our dynamic.
So awkward.
And so, yeah, and so Faith and I did our first episode together, just the two of us, and we've got about four or five more episodes before we get really good, just the two of us, I think. But usually when it was the three of us, me, Aaron, and Faith, it would be like, you know, we'd say something stupid and funny before, because usually Faith would be like the last one to show up because she is remote, right? So me and Aaron together, and then we'd be saying something funny, and then it would be recording already. Faith would come in, she'd start laughing, and then, you know, we say ridiculous things afterwards too. And you've been with us several times, you know, guy. But like usually that's what the outtakes became. But like. Right. But on reunion with me and Faith, like, we literally had outtakes. Like, we just had to, like, just cut it out, like, and move it to the end. It's just like...
The whole episode's an outtake.
Like,
it was so bad.
We recorded half an episode, and then we were like, wow, this is bad. And I almost made it an outtake, but I'm like, that's way too long, and I don't want to confuse people by hearing, like, the intro again.
Yeah, we have weird stuff like that. But my, but the two of us on Geek Tank, we've been doing things together for nearly a decade. So we already have, like, our chemistry already figured out and everything like that, which is good.
Yeah.
Because we just sit there and we get into a rhythm and a pattern that works really well. But yeah, I remember the first time the two of us tried to do anything on stage together, because we were both in the same improv group. And just trying to do things together, we couldn't, you know, in improv, you pass the ball back and forth, so to speak. And it's like a verbal game where you, and we just couldn't, we kept missing, and it was, oh, it was horrible.
But I mean,
it was like a disaster.
But I think the first time we had you on, Guy, it was perfect. And like, you like rolled with the punches as soon as like they happened. Like, you were really good with us the first time. And every time you've been on, but I mean, like, it was like no time to like get the thing figured out. So it was kind of nice.
Oh, I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
It was really cool.
It's because you guys are fun. I like you guys.
Yeah. This is fun. This is playtime.
One person on the internet likes us. Yay.
I like this podcast a lot, as far as a podcast goes, because you guys are interesting and somewhat irreverent, which is good. You got a little bit
that's been said a lot today.
Yes.
Irreverence.